These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Today you got Gasper Murray, normally the official show of your Saturday morning trip to Target. We're filling in for the guys today alongside Christian Arcand. In my normal spot, he's chiming in, handling the Sports Hub headlines. Again, the latest, another Celtics injury, Marcus Smart. Sounds like he's going to be out indefinitely after he dove for a ball, loose ball last night in the loss to the Pacers. And he re-injured that thumb, which he put through a glass picture, whatever it was, in the hotel out in Los Angeles.
Some glass
about a month and a half ago. So it's the injury stacking up for the Celtics. Talked a lot about the Pats, Tom versus Time, episode number 6. So all your thoughts on these things that we've touched on a re-entry Monday at 617-779-0985. We'll go to Lisa in Canton. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi. I was just wondering, do you think that they're going to give Rob Gronkowski those incentives like they gave him last year? Because I was curious how he was going to react if they signed Nate Solder at a higher salary than him. And then he's got Stephon Gilmore's making more and Brandon Cooks. So what I was just wondering what you guys thought about what they were going to do for Gronk.
Thanks for the call, Lisa. I would think if I'm in Gronk's shoes, after playing on an incentivized contract, which he basically hit everything that he needed to hit to get the money that he got, look, I understand the concerns about his back and how many times he's been injured, and he's certainly not a lock to play all 16 games in a regular season. But with as much as he brings to the table and as important he is to the offense, and if he's kind of wavering here, I think he has the advantage to tell them, look, you're going to pay me. The hell with the incentives. Like, this is the deal that I want. It has to be close to some of the top wide receivers in the game because I'm that important to this offense. And you know it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on that. I think when you look at his deal now, you know, they put the incentive in last year and bumped it up. The base salaries are high the last 2 years of this deal, or relatively high. But I think the issue with Gronk is that he doesn't want to be on the tight end pay scale. He wants to be paid based on what he is, which is one of the most dynamic offensive players in the game. So he wants to be paid on the pay scale of Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, guys like that, not Jordan Reed, who's at the top of the tight end pay scale. So the deal he has the next couple of years, that, like I said, the base salary is higher, but if you're him and you're going out there and risking your body, and it's a situation where I can go play this year for, I think it's $8 million, but they could just cut me after the year if I get hurt, and then I'm done. So do I want to pay? Do I want to go out there and play for $8 million, or do I want to get some real big time guaranteed money in a second contract here and get all this stuff bumped up so I get these guarantees? If I'm him, that's what I want. I want some guarantees. If I'm going to put my body on the line and I'm seriously thinking about maybe moving on from the NFL, then I want to know that I have substantial money coming to me, even if I get hurt. You know, even if I suffer a major injury, like when TJ Ward blew out my knee. I don't want to know that the team can just use me for a year and then discard me if I get hurt.
And there's other deals that are already going down here with players that position that, you know, Gronk could say, like, what, you mean to tell me I'm not worth more than Cameron Brate, who today signed a 6-year, $41 million deal with the Tampa Bay Bucks that includes $18 million guaranteed?
Yeah.
$18 million guaranteed for Cameron Brate?
Cameron Brate, who couldn't even catch a touchdown pass against the Patriots in the end zone. Remember that?
Right at the end of that game. Yeah,
he should have caught that ball.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Cameron Brate's a nice tight end, but he's no Rob Gronkowski.
No.
That goes without saying. So the market, even for the tight end market's coming. I'll be really interested to see what Trey Burton gets and Jimmy Graham, what those guys get. Because I think that they could bump up the market as well. And if I'm Gronk, ultimately, my goal is I come at the Patriots with wide receiver numbers, but I want to be about halfway between the top of the tight end market and the top of the wide receiver market, which is probably $13.5, $14 million AAV, average annual value. That's what I'm trying to get to if I'm him.
Let's go to Pete in Essex with a thought on IT's revenge game last night over the Cavaliers. What's up, Pete?
Jim, don't give up on the Isaiah Thomas thing, because he did score those points for us, and he did win some games for us, and he was a fun player to watch. That is not the issue, Jim. The issue is his unprofessionalism when he gets traded and the shock that he has that he's a commodity, especially a commodity where he thinks he should be paid as one of the top 10 players in the league. If you're going to be one of those players and you're going to be that kind of paid player, there's a chance a team might say, we can do better, or, you know, this is getting too expensive. That's the problem with him. It's not how he plays on the court. It's his overinflated sense of self and the absolute shock at getting traded from us and then again from Cleveland. Does he understand how it works? But
oh, he could have Pete with that, like his the attitude. That's what, you know, that's half the reason I called him the multi little peanut. The attitude and his lack of self awareness, it really rubbed me the wrong way. I never had any issue with the backup the Brinks truck thing after Kyle Lowry got 3 years, $100 million last year. Like, he deserves some kind of a big payday. But yeah, how he acted and oh, the woe is me and the videos that he had up on, like all that stuff, that got old.
Don't
that's why
up
I got on
that because that's still there.
No. But I did like it. I did love it. I did love him shoving it right in the Cavs' face last night, especially
that's
after
fine.
That Weasley column on ESPN.
Can I just to discuss with you and Chris and Jimmy? You know, I think the NBA's got something going on with some of these teams and the players that got put together. The Houston thing. You know, the Thunder, all this. But when LeBron gave out his list, it's already started, and I'm already sick of it. We are going to be dealing with where is LeBron going for the next, like, 4 months. And I'm already tired of it, and the NBA should be, like, they should tell ESPN, calm down. But it'll be daily now.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Oh, that's definitely going to be coming. I mean,
another
it's already
summer
started.
Of LeBron.
And we didn't even touch on that on our show on Saturday, but that list came out this week, and it's short. I think the teams on it are L.A., the 76ers, Houston. Of those three, what's the best landing spot for them? And even it sounds like L.A. would be out of it, but you see that, you know, they have a lot of young talent there. I don't know why he would say no to that.
Well, that's the
Lonzo
thing.
Lonzo Ball.
Oh, yeah, what, there's a thing with the dad, or is it?
Yep,
is,
there's a thing with the dad, and... And structurally, that team doesn't make sense for LeBron. LeBron needs to go to a team with shooters. So
yeah.
Philadelphia and Houston both make sense, especially if they have rights to re-sign J.J. Redick. Is there a more perfect player to play with LeBron than J.J. Redick and Embiid?
Oh, I would love him in Philadelphia. I think it'd be good for the East. It'd be good
Wouldn't be good for the Celtics.
No, but, I mean, in terms of the storyline.
Good
with
for the talk show, Chris.
Yeah, this That's young true. Team, good and the as these guys grow, like, look, those battles would be awesome to be talking about just during the regular season.
But if you're LeBron, do you really, like, can you make that type of gamble at this stage in your career that Embiid's going to stay healthy?
And that's the biggest risk of all.
And also, I think having LeBron there, LeBron and Ben Simmons to me are like redundant.
And Maz has brought this up before, yeah, because
Simmons
they're so ball dominant.
Simmons needs the ball to do what he, and Simmons is, talking about a guy who's not a shooter, my lord, you know, he's not at all. So, I mean, there's some redundancy there. I mean, look, if you're the 76ers, do you turn down LeBron James if he wants to come to your team? Absolutely not. But there would be some things they'd have to work out tactically.
Let's go to John in Berlin. Oh, guten Tag. Hello, John.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I just wanted to run by a quick idea and see what you guys think. Because if the choice is between Gronkowski and Nate Solder, what do you think about the idea of trading Gronk because someone's going to pay through the nose for him and then using whatever you get from that in order to pick up a linebacker or a cornerback or both and retaining Solder? Because you're 1-2 in the Super Bowl with Gronk, but you're 4-0 without him.
I just don't know. And, John, I don't know what the return would be on Rob Gronkowski right now because you don't have the assurance that he wants to play football, that he's going to sign with a team. If, you know, look, I know he's under contract now, but obviously he wants some kind of a new deal. So just even outside the financial aspect of it, the injury aspect of it, you have to be concerned if you're another team with how many back surgeries that he's had, how many times he doesn't make it through a season. Like, could you realistically get a number one pick for Rob Gronkowski right now? I have my doubts.
Yeah, I have my doubts about that, too. And also, I think Gronk holds the cards here with the whole WWE thing, because if it's a team that he's not interested in playing for, even if they are willing to pay him, he could just say, no, I'm not, I don't want to do that deal. If you trade me there, I'm going to retire. And that sort of kills the market a little bit.
Yeah, I think he has them completely over a barrel. I think the WWE thing is real. I think that's legitimate. And
how do you think Brady reacts to a Rob Gronkowski trade?
Oh, God.
Episode 7. Here we go.
Episode 7, titled F You, I'm Done. Oh, man. Yeah, that, like, I really believe, like, he's, you know, Maz went off about this last week, that he's done with the selfishness that he believes is going on with Rob Gronkowski right now. Like, make a decision. Let us know. Tell us if it's about a contract. That part I agree with. If it's just about the money, like, say it's
about
the money.
Yeah, I'm over the cryptic tweets. Yeah, I'm down with Maz there.
But you know, I'm a guy that's always going to side with, I mean, you know, grew up in a union family. I'm always going to side with the worker over the company. And in Gronk, like, he's at such an advantage here because he has a legitimate thing that he can walk away and go to and make a lot of money. How many guys in the NFL have that opportunity? They have these holdouts, and the team knows they can look right at that player and say, well, what are you going to really do without us? You're going to go into TV and make a few million bucks a year in your prime? Yeah, good luck. You're not going to do that.
And just where the Patriots are at as a franchise, right, with Brady still at the top of his game at age 40, the reigning MVP, with an idea that you are so close to winning another championship. You were so close this past season, and that's a guy that can help you and be the difference. Like, I remember one of the NFL Films videos, you know, Belichick basically, they asked him, well, you know, what was the difference, you know, in some of these times you didn't win the Super Bowl? He's like, well, you know, not having Rob healthy. You know, talking about not being able to win it in 2011 in Super Bowl 46 and not being able to win it in 2012. He was like, well, you know, if we had a healthy Rob, you know. So, I mean, that's Belichick. How often does he say that about a guy? So where they're at as an organization, I think, also works to Gronk's advantage.
A former Patriot cornerback who played with Malcolm Butler continues to question Bill Belichick's decision in sitting Butler in Super Bowl 52. We'll play that sound for you and take more of your phone calls here on Felger and Maz on a re-entry Monday on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger and Maz, The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Maz.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I happen to be one of the ones to speak up. I shine light on what it was. You know, I got feelings for my partner. That's my mm-hmm. homeboy, you know. I seen him tear up, you know, in pregame.
Yeah, he was hurt.
And I was trying to figure out what that was. I'm like, damn, he ain't never cried for the national anthem. You know, I was in that locker room, and they go man to man. So they match up. And my eyes, I felt like they thought, you know, Rose, a six-footer, you could put him on Alshon Jeffries. And that could be the excuse.
No. People don't realize sometimes with height, you lose athleticism, right, lose agility.
And even not even that, you can't judge a man's heart off of height, off of nothing on paper.
Brandon Browner, former Patriot cornerback, on his new podcast. Like, we need another podcast. Let's just, everyone in the world have a podcast now. But Brandon Browner on Unplugged Episode 1. With Miko Grimes, the always outspoken Miko Grimes.
There's a duo right there.
Yeah, wife of Brent Grimes. Oh, I had to edit that. I had to listen, and it was like, all right, Miko, can you just clean it up, mouth of a sailor? But it is interesting. Brandon Browner was outspoken about this, ripping the decision to bench Malcolm Butler in Super Bowl 52 on Instagram. He continues here. And that last part I agree with completely. Like, towards the end of the game, or at least in the second half, Bill, for whatever reason that he pissed you off, you had him in uniform, switch things up. You can't stop this Eagles team and Nick Foles. You can't get off the field on third down time and time again. How about, you know that Malcolm Butler brings heart. He's made big plays before in this game and at other points when you've put him on some of the best receivers in the game. Switch it up, please. I'm still not over it. Clearly Brandon Browner isn't, and rightfully so.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because you think about Super Bowl 49 and obviously the play that Malcolm Butler made. Malcolm Butler was in that game, speaking of switching it up, because Chris Matthews was killing Kyle Arrington.
Right.
That they made that change. They made that change in the middle of the game and said, okay, Kyle Arrington's our guy, but he's getting killed here. Let's go to somebody else, Malcolm Butler. So couldn't you look at that and say, oh my God, okay, we're getting Johnson Bademosi's getting killed here, or what we're having to do with the three safeties isn't working. Malcolm, go. You know, get in there. Do your thing.
Everyone's got a fatal flaw. Every single person. Stubbornness. It's one of mine. So in that sense,
no.
Bill Belichick. Chris, jerk.
No. What, you mean we're going to this restaurant and they don't take reservations? I think that's a pretty bad idea. You know, I hate to be a jerk about it, but can we switch restaurants?
Don't wait in lines, Chris. I don't have that kind of time.
Yeah, you really don't.
Time's too important. So, like Bill Belichick, this is where maybe he needs some checks and balances or someone to at least check him. You know, someone above him. Maybe Robert Kraft. Maybe he's had to do it before, because stubbornness, at least in the 5-6 weeks here or since the Super Bowl, stubbornness is really making him look bad. Stubbornness and not putting Malcolm Butler into the second half of Super Bowl 52, stubbornness in not picking up the phone to at least have a conversation with Richard Sherman, who they lose out on. Because as of last week, Aqib Talib, Richard Sherman, it felt like one of them was going to end up in a Patriots uniform in 2018. Now Aqib Talib's a member of the Rams. Richard Sherman is a member of the San Francisco 49ers. And as you peel back that deal and really look at it, now he's betting on himself, and I'm sure Richard Sherman will be fine. But as of right now, today, the real money, it's $3 million. $3 million. Richard Sherman wanted to play with Tom Brady. He wanted to come here. There was some interest. You don't even pick up the phone because of what? Stubbornness? What, you don't want to throw that money around, or at least have a conversation? Stubbornness. Stubbornness in Bill Belichick, it's a problem right now.
Yeah, you can make that case when you connect it like that. I mean, I don't know if we're ever going to get an answer about Super Bowl 52 and
never.
Malcolm Butler.
That ain't happening.
I mean, I don't buy for a second that it was a football thing, and we'll be talking about it until we get an explanation. So who knows what happened? You know, was it insubordination? Did Butler go after a coach or say something to a coach, and Bill felt like he had to draw the line? You know, was it something else? Was it just an accumulation of the whole year? We don't know. We don't know what the situation is there. I'm not as upset as you about the Sherman Tlaib thing. I mean, would I like one of those guys? Yeah, I would. But I mean, there's limited cap space. I've used that example of the Saints. Everybody gets all excited about free agency. And you look at last offseason for the Patriots and what they did, and not just free agency, but the whole offseason, it was loading up. We were all praising it. I was praising it as well. And at the end of the day, like, how many of those moves really worked out? Like, even though Gilmore played well the second half of the year, do you think he played up to that contract?
No.
No. Mm-mm. So how many is so everybody was praising them for winning the offseason, myself included. I include myself there.
19-0, here it comes.
I was wrong, that's right. I was in that 19-0 boat. And it didn't work out. So they're gonna try something different here. I think they need a deeper draft. And as I said to you before, they're not sexy moves. But if they get Nate Solder and Danny Amendola back, like, to me, successful offseason.
And Christian, you tend to agree with him more than me in terms of getting a Tlaib or Sherman. You want them to handle things internally.
I think that that's probably the case. I mean, you just talked about 2014. In 2014, Darrelle Revis and Brandon Brown are both left, and you were left with Malcolm Butler, and no one was that excited about that. You know, we liked his interception in the Super Bowl, but no one thought he was going to turn into this Pro Bowl caliber corner, and he did. So, I mean, I'm not freaking out about the idea of it being Gilmore and Eric Rowe next year.
I don't think it's that bad.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, Christian. I don't think Eric Rowe, like, here's one thing. And
he was good in the second half of that game.
He was. And in Tom versus Time, they showed another angle of that Alshon Jeffrey touchdown. And, like, his hand's right there. It's not like he got completely destroyed or toasted. He was there. If he's your second cornerback, like, I don't think that's terrible, Jim. That's not like Johnson Batamosi being your number two cornerback. It's not like having Phillip Adams.
He's your number three
out there. Yeah. Well, no, because Jonathan Jones is going to come back, and he had a great year.
True.
But it's not like putting Phillip Adams out there, or Hank Poteet, or Earthwind Moreland. It's not one of those guys. Like, Eric Rowe can play. You know, he's not the great. Here's the thing on the corners. Sherman or Tlaib would be great, but here's what all you need to find is another Logan Ryan. Whether you find that guy in the draft, whether you find that guy on your roster, whether you pick him up somewhere in free agency on a one-year deal or whatever, you need Logan Ryan. You don't need to go out and get, even though I would have loved this guy, like a Marcus Peters type guy. You don't need that.
Let's go to Anthony in Medford on Tlaib and Sherman. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, what's up, Big Jim?
What's up?
Nothing. Usually just talking about what that Tlaib. I mean, they only gave up a fifth round pick because I know the money might not be there. And I'm ain't really an Eric Rowe fan. I'm hoping one of the Jones can step up, Jonathan or Cyrus.
Cyrus is your guy. That's your guy, man.
Yeah, and I'll tell you right now, it ain't going to be Cyrus Jones. He has been a proud member of the Get the F Off My Team.
Exactly.
Since pretty much he came into the league and started fumbling all over the place, Cyrus Jones. I wish you the best, but it ain't going to be here. Bye. You screwed up on that one, Bill. It's safe to admit you blew it on Cyrus Jones. I'll say this. It'll be an easier pill for me to swallow if they do nothing here, and it's just going to be Eric Rowe as CB2 in 2018. If they continue to tinker with that front seven, which they've already started to do with this Danny Shelton, who, you know, they had issues in stopping the run last year. That was obvious. You usually didn't see that with the Patriots in recent years. So, okay, they're starting there. Maybe that frees up some guys to do some different things. Malcolm Brown could be more of a pass rusher like he was at Texas. Maybe they, you know, there was this hypothetical trade that was on ESPN Insider last week. Maybe they moved their first round pick for a Jadeveon Clowney. Like, okay, so maybe they focus more on the pass rush, which they didn't have much of last year, rather than the secondary. If that's what it's going to be, I can live with that.
Yeah, and I think that's actually what it's going to be. I mean, I don't know. You know, a guy that is interesting to me and is Trent Murphy from the Redskins, who's coming off an injury season. He'd be someone you could plug in here. He's not necessarily an upper echelon pass rusher, but he has, you know, a 9-sack season on his resume. That's somebody that maybe you bring in and Belichick can sort of get the most out of. You have to upgrade that front seven. I think linebacker for me is a bigger need than cornerback. And you talk about guys, you know, you just said the get the F off my team like type of guys. For me, one of those guys is like Shea McClellan. It hasn't worked. He has all the talent in the world, and he's physically gifted, and unfortunately he ran into the concussion issues last year, but I just cannot get out of my mind that first offensive play for the Falcons in Super Bowl 51 when he just got absolutely destroyed on the toss crack, and he basically got benched in that game. So they need to upgrade that linebacking core. That's more important to me than what's happening at corner, because I think they'll figure it out. And I also think it's a deep cornerback draft this year, and you can pull somebody out of that draft who can help you.
Let's go to Jesse in New Bedford with the Patriots thought. Hey, Jesse, you're next here on Felger and Mass.
Hey, how you doing, Jim?
Good.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the offseason moves. Like you said a couple minutes ago, if we could get Clowney, maybe, you know, trade a draft pick or whatever we need to do to get him, I'm all for that. And like you said, just tinker with that front line, because that's where we had trouble. Because in the Super Bowl, the coverage was there for the most part. It's just we couldn't get after the quarterback. I mean, he was pitching back there. I mean, we just need our defensive line and linebackers help. I mean, maybe I heard Dominique Rogers Kamadi's out there, William Gay, Tom Bradley, which I'm not a big fan of, but that's pretty much all I had to say. We just need to get a few little pots here and work on our defensive line, and I think we'll be all set for next year.
Thanks, Jesse. So you've brought this up on our weekend show before. You know, you would give the MVP of Super Bowl 52 to the Eagles' offensive line.
Yes.
Like, you know, the Patriots had any semblance of a pass rush, they're going to get Nick Foles off his spot. Maybe he makes a mistake or turns into Nick Foles like I was expecting to happen. So, okay, this is where I can live with this. If they tinker with this, they have some legitimate pass rushing options. Okay, you know, I can live with the fact that they ultimately don't end up going out and getting an Aqib Talib or a Richard Sherman.
The other thing on this, too, is when you look at it and you break it down by position group, how much do you want to allocate to defensive backs? You have Stephon Gilmore on a top-of-the-market deal. You have Devin McCourty at safety on a top-of-the-market deal. You know, Jerron Harmon got a nice contract. How much money do you want to allocate to that one particular group? And if you bring in Talib at $11 million, or even, you know, Tyrann Mathieu's a guy that I know a lot of people like.
Love him.
Yeah, and if he, let's say he doesn't get released, he gets traded. If you're looking at having to pay him about $11 million, the way that contract breaks down, to come in here this year, do you want to do that? How much do you want to allocate to that particular position group?
I don't know if you, Arcan, if you talked about this on any of the shows you've done the last couple of days, but that hypothetical trade popped up from Mike Sando on ESPN Insider last week. Would you do Jadeveon Clowney, Houston Texans send pass rusher Jadeveon Clowney to the Patriots for their 2018 first round choice, even if that means Clowney, who's on the last year of his deal, doesn't re-sign here?
Yes, I would. In the spirit of the Brady window, I would do that, but I don't think Bill would do that in a million billion years.
Even after Brandon Cooks last year?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think he'd go down that road again. Last year's offseason was so unusual. I mean, it was so, like, just a departure from what Bill always does, that I just kind of feel like, you know, Cooks was really the only move that kind of worked, and it didn't even really work that well.
Yeah.
Coney Ealy and Dwayne Allen, I mean, the rest of these guys, come on. I can't imagine him trying that again.
I love him. You said on the weekend, too, you'd do it even if you didn't have the guarantee.
I'd do it. I don't think Bill would do it.
Yeah. 25, 9.5 sacks, a couple of forced fumbles, interceptions. He's just, when he's healthy, like he was last year, he's a beast.
Yeah, he's an immense player. But the difference with the Cooks thing is that when they made that deal for Cooks, they knew, okay, we have this fifth-year option. So we have control. We're going to have this guy for at least 2 years if we want. Clowney, that would be a different situation. Plus, Trey Flowers is a free agent after this year, so you have to pay him.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, it's one of those ones that popped up. Without thinking about it, it's just going with my gut. I would do it.
No, I'd do it, too. I mean, it's Jadeveon Clowney.
All right. It being a re-entry Monday, we're going to touch on the Bruins. Their winning streak stopped yesterday in Chicago, but Chris has a thought on Brad Marchand and what happened with him on Saturday. So we're going to get to that right after the Hub headlines here with Christian Arcand. It's Felger and Mass, Gaspar Murray in for the guys. It's 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
617-779-0985. It is a re-entry Monday. I wanted to touch on the Bruins, who lost yesterday. They split the home-and-home with the Chicago Blackhawks, opening up their four-game road trip. Brad Marchand didn't play in yesterday's game due to an upper body injury. And for those watching on the simulcast, you see me using the air quotes. Marchand didn't play because of an upper body injury. I think it stems from what happened on Saturday, which is the reason you played that sound. Chris, you have some thoughts on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I just think when you look at it, I thought Nick Kiprios from Hockey Night in Canada nailed it. It's like, how many of these accidental, on-purpose things is Marchand going to be involved in? And when I looked at that video, I look at this and I'm like, you know what? I think you could have avoided him without clotheslining him. I think he just can't help himself. I really do. He's a recidivist when it comes to this. And I think in the heat of the moment, he just can't help himself. And I look at that play, and I just feel like it didn't need to happen. I know he said it was an accident.
He did try to get out of the way. Like what
he did, but then he raises his arm at the last second. I think he could have gotten out of the way without clotheslining the guy. Yeah, and if it were a different player who had not been suspended as many times as he's been, what is it, six times now?
Yeah, I believe that's what it is, yeah.
Yeah. If it were a different player, then maybe I would buy the accident thing. But it's just too many of these. When this happens enough times, it's hard for me to buy that it's an accident or a coincidence when the same guy keeps being involved over and over. And either way I look at it, and I feel like it sort of hurts the Bruins. Now, hopefully it's not an injury. You used air quotes. He didn't actually hurt himself on that. He just had to sit out because they were worried about retribution against the Blackhawks.
That's exactly what I thought that it was. Well, I think a lot on that team and throughout the league, they thought that that was cheap, and he got away with it, and they didn't want repercussions against him yesterday. And I don't think that there was any injury at all. That's just my gut. I don't know. Maybe he's really hurt, but I think that he was sat for a reason yesterday, and that was they didn't want payback.
But they certainly could have used him, especially given
doubt.
Their injury situations with Bergeron and McAvoy. So it's once again, whether it's injury or they have to keep him out because they're worried about retribution, it's once again he's taking himself, he's subtracting himself out of the mix when the team needs him. Look, again, maybe it really was an accident, but when you have that type of track record of not being able to restrain yourself, and we've seen it, you know, go to the slew foot. Was it Marcus Johansson this year for the Devils, that the elbow? How many of these things can you tell me, like, you didn't mean to do them, but you did them, and I'm supposed to believe you?
It's tough with me because I like the fact that he plays on that line and often goes over it. There is a, you know, there's that other intangible you have to always worry about as the opposition when you go up against Marchand.
Sure.
You know, he's such a talented offensive player, but also, you know, is an elbow coming? Is something a little bit dirty coming that I think can keep a team in check? But oftentimes it is selfish, too. I go back and forth with this so many times, Christian. Like, I love him, but there's times he drives me crazy. If nothing else, with what happened Saturday, I'm glad he ain't getting suspended for it, because I did think he tried to get out of the way.
I think so, too. And I think if the NHL thought there was any chance that that was a dirty player, that he did it on purpose or anything, they would have got him. They got him $2,000 for embellishment the other day.
Right.
They nailed Backes for three games for a ridiculous suspension, which, I don't know, I'm not going to say there's a conspiracy against the Bruins here, but I just sort of feel like the NHL does not give Brad Marchand the benefit of the doubt ever, and they did in this particular instance. So they clearly saw something that made them say, okay, we normally go after this guy, but we can't for this.
Do either of you, one of the things I keep hearing now, at least from callers listening to other shows, I'm seeing it on social media too, the Bruins are peaking too early. They're peaking too early. Do you buy into the Bruins peaking too early?
Peaking too early? I mean, I don't know. When I look at the NHL playoffs, they're so unpredictable. Right? It's the most unpredictable playoffs in major North American team sports. So how do you know if somebody's peaking too early? I mean, it doesn't matter. Seeding doesn't even matter
right. In
the NHL playoffs. And a lot of times it comes down to who's playing the best at the time, who has a hot goalie, who's healthy, all of those things. So I don't look at them as peaking too early. I think in that series against Toronto that's coming up, that home ice advantage could mean everything in that series. I think it's going to be a really challenging series for the Bruins, and having a game 7 on home ice could be the difference in it. So I don't want to see them take their foot off the pedal at this point, because I think that they're going to need home ice.
I think it's going to look that way, the peaking too early thing, because they have, what, 15, 16 games left, and 7 of those games are against the two hottest teams other than them in the league right now, Tampa and Florida. So, you know, I don't expect it to be all sunshine and roses going to the end. However, I'm kind of getting myself through this knowing that Bergeron and hopefully McAvoy will be back for the playoffs. So, you know, if they peak too early, they've been peaking all year since November. I mean, they haven't slowed down. It's been a continuous peak here. If they're going to drop off a little bit, fine. But Bergeron and McAvoy coming back, I think sort of it makes it a little better for me. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I the bigger sample size is from the end of November until now. Mm. That's real. I don't think this is, oh, they've been hot and they've been peaking too early. Yeah. And like you say, too, the unpredictability of the NHL playoffs, like, who the hell knows? You know, like, I'd rather them be playing as well as they possibly can right now, because I think this is who they actually are. Brian in Fitchburg on what happened with Brad Marchand this weekend. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, guys. It's an honor to be part of the Arkham Asylum.
Thank you.
Hey, Jim, two quick points. First, don't you kind of hope that yesterday was an internal suspension or whatnot with Sweeney, Neely, and Marchand, that they're sick of his crap, and basically for him to just sit down and instead of making it a big story, they just called it an upper body injury? And then my second question is, have you guys found, whether it's the Bruins or any NHL game, that high sticks are on a high this year?
The latter, I guess I haven't paid too much attention to, Brian. I'll keep an eye out for it going forward. But on what he first brought up, maybe that's what it was. I don't think that, again, I don't know. Just going with my gut here. It's what we do in sports radio. We throw stuff against the wall. Maybe Brad Marchand does have an upper body issue. But something's going on there. Because, I mean, it was the same team. It was a home and home. You know, I'm sure, you know, considering the history, they thought it was cheap. They were looking for some sort of retribution with the Blackhawks yesterday, so that's why they sat him. Or, like the caller just said, maybe it was some sort of an internal suspension, which I wouldn't have blamed them for either. Like,
yeah,
I mean, look, as we head into the playoffs, like, we can't have this.
Exactly, and that's my point. I mean, either way, it's not good. And just, look, again, maybe it really was an accident, but I think Brad Marchand long ago lost the benefit of the doubt. And the reality is, you know, we love him here, so we're willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's a great player. I mean, he was the NHL just named him the second star of the week today. And he's a great player. He's important to the Bruins. And guys like that, when they're on your team, you love them. When they're on the other team, you hate them, and you say they're the dirtiest player in the league. That's just the way that it works. But when I go back and look at that video of it, if it was an accident, then why is he getting up, sort of skating over to Duclair and sort of staring down at him? Like, you know, it's not. It didn't look like he was staring down at him to check on him. It looked like he was kind of like, that's what you get, type of stare down from Brad Marchand. And again, I could be totally wrong. But can you tell me that based on this player's history that I'm just making this all up?
No.
And it's all in my head? Like, this is what happens when you play that way. People are going to look at it and be able to interpret your actions a certain way because of how you performed and behaved in the past.
This is Felger and Mazz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
When did this soreness start for you?
Started in Houston. It was aching. So, you know, I thought a few days, usually it just subsides. But, you know, it's been aching for a little bit. So, you know, just going to do what's necessary in order to get back where I need to be to feel uncomfortable. That's about it.
If he doesn't feel 100%, then we need to have him sit. And so I think that that's something that, you know, we've all talked about. That was why he didn't come back in.
Do you know, is this something that will have to be dealt with later down the road, more of a long
term? I don't know. I hope not. Been down that road before of having a fractured kneecap already. So I think that taking games like this and being smart about it probably will put me in a better position not to be in, you know, out for a long period of time, because that's the last thing I want to do right now.
Celtics Kyrie Irving along with Brad Stevens, Coach Brad Stevens. Kyrie talking about his injured knee, pulled himself out of last night's loss at home, 99-97 to the Indiana Pacers. I was there, and then all of a sudden, you know, halfway through the third quarter, Chris, I was like, wait a minute, where's Kyrie? I typically don't look at my phone during the games, but I opened it up, looked at Twitter, and oh my God, it's the knee that held him out in a game last week. The knee that's given him problems before. You hear he's being asked there, I believe it was Abby Chin of NBC Sports Boston was asking him, so is this something you're going to be concerned with going forward? I don't know. I'm concerned. Big C. Because this is something I feel like he thought about having surgery on in the first place. I mean, it's one of the things that he used as leverage to get himself out of Cleveland, right? You know, so there was an update today from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, though. He tweeted, there is confidence Celtics guard Kyrie Irving's left knee soreness is no more than tendonitis. He will not need to miss significant time. League sources tell ESPN he's considered day-to-day.
That's encouraging. What that would lead me to believe is, you know, they did whatever the testing Brad said they were going to do and nothing came back. You can say it's tendonitis all you want, though. It's about how Kyrie Irving feels.
Right.
And if he doesn't feel 100%, if he doesn't feel like, as he said the other night, that he can go out there and play at the level he needs to play at and he's used to playing at and sustain that level of play, then it's still an issue.
So we have that. He's going to miss what sounds like a couple of games, Kyrie Irving. Daniel Tice, news today. He's out for the rest of the season with a torn meniscus. That sucks because he's been good off the bench. And now we get news that Marcus Smart has a torn ligament in his thumb, and the question is now whether or not he can play through it. It was Sham Sharania, I believe I'm saying that correctly, of The Vertical and Yahoo Sports, who reported Smart suffered a torn tendon in his right thumb out indefinitely. He did this while diving for a ball last night. Love it. Marcus Smart type of play. You saw that he hurt himself. At the time, Chris, I took it with a grain of salt. He's like, all right, he's always going to play this up as much as he always does when he gets injured. But no, this is the hand that he also put through glass on that West Coast road trip now, you know, going on month and a half ago. So I guess I can't say I'm that surprised, but it sucks when you look at this team right now. They're a MASH unit. And if nothing else, I don't want them pushing for the one seed in the East going forward.
No, I agree with you on that. I mean, I just don't think it's really worth it to push for that seed because I think Toronto can be had in the postseason. We talked about that in the show. I'm just not a believer in the Raptors. I think they're sort of a regular season team. And I think the way they're built, relying so much on that bench, it's going to be hard for that to translate night after night in the NBA playoffs for 2, 3, 4 series. So I don't think you necessarily have to chase them down. You're clear of, you know, Cleveland. You're good. I'm not saying you wave the white flag on it. You still have 2 more games with them. And if you're healthy enough to have Kyrie play in those games, then he should play in those games. But also, you don't want to go crazy and start chasing them down. I think you can take your foot off the gas a little bit here.
Yeah, that shouldn't be the focus. The focus should be getting these guys healthy as fast as they possibly can, or at least get them ready for the playoffs. Danny and Stowe with a Celtics thought. Go ahead. You're next here on Felger and Mass.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Hopefully now, with Smart being hurt now, Rozier will get a lot more playing time. Smart has always played more minutes than him. But if you look at the numbers, Rozier has better numbers. And if you put him in a leadership role, he tends to excel.
How about that? More of Rozier? What's the silver lining here? Is it more minutes for a guy like Terry Rozier with some of these guys out?
I don't think there's any silver lining.
No, neither do I.
Silver line. I mean, you know, I know I'm sitting in the Maz chair. I don't want to do the sky is falling thing. But silver lining? What are you talking about? They're getting decimated by injuries by the hour. But Rozier has played well, and I think he's a key guy for them. But, you know, when they are able to assemble this team and get everybody back, hopefully, Rozier is a guy that I think makes a big difference on that bench in terms of bench scoring. When he performs and plays well off the bench and gives them bench scoring, then their bench doesn't look so bad, and it doesn't feel like they're stressing the starters to score. When he has these stretches or these games where he goes out there and doesn't produce, then it's an issue. So maybe with increased playing time, you'll get more consistency from him. I can't remember this, but I feel like you would. What was the game this year that Kyrie missed where he had like a great game? Did he have like a triple-double?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Rozier did have a triple-double. Irving missed 2 games. Rozier was really good in the first one and then stunk in the second one, if I recall correctly.
And that's the story of his
season.
That's
how he is, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of been the story of his season. The talent is there and it pops. The consistency is not there.
Let's go to Cameron in Hampton on the Bruins. You're next year on Felger and Mass with Gaspar Murray today. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just a point on Rick Nash here. Nash has been a -4 since he got to the Bruins with 4 goals, 3 goals, 1 assist. And Ryan Spooner has 12 points in his first 7 games with the Rangers. So what do you guys think about Nash and the move? And my other thing is, do you think Ryan Donato is going to be coming in for this playoff run? He had a hat trick last night in the CAC playoffs. Thanks, guys.
Can't really speak to the latter, honestly, but
I think you'll see him here.
Yeah, you do, Jimmy. Have you heard something?
I think he'll be that McAvoy or JFK call up.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, he can play.
In terms of Rick Nash, I don't think twice about that deal. I know he had that point. You know, he did was held out a point for 3 games, but even in the game on against Philadelphia on Thursday, he was throwing his body around. He scored on Saturday. Like, I don't doubt that just because Spooner's been going off with the New York Rangers. No, I would rather have the big body in Nash. I know, you know, he hasn't had the best playoff record in his career, but I'd rather have him than Ryan Spooner, who's going to get bullied come the playoffs.
I might have to recuse myself here, Jim. I think I've exhausted my hockey time. I need Daddy, can you talk hockey for me?
Arcan, do you look at that stat line since that deal has been made? Do you go back on it? And like,
not
it
at
didn't
all.
Happen?
Not at all. Spooner in New York is fine. They have no pressure over there, and Spooner was having a good year here. I expected him to do well wherever he went. Rick Nash, yeah, his numbers individually haven't been great, but what that line is doing right now with that David Krejci and the way he's been playing, and even DeBrusque on the other side, you can't deny it. I mean, that line is dynamic right now, and Nash is the reason. I mean, that's 100%, I think, why Krejci's playing so well, and DeBrusque, I mean, both of those guys are really benefiting from Nash on that line, and there's no other way to look at it.
The change to Krejci was obvious as soon as he was put on that line, and I think to have buyer's remorse about that just because you see the line with this Rangers team that has been playing pretty well since the deal was made, like, stop it. Ryan Spooner is going to get pushed around
and
in the
also,
playoffs.
Just in general,
they're
though,
not going to the playoffs.
No, I know. I'm saying if he was still on this line.
But sometimes, you know, you always see this, and you're like, oh, you have to recognize, sometimes a guy needs a change of scenery. So because Ryan Spooner is doing that with the Rangers, doesn't mean that he'd be doing that here with the Bruins.
Let's go to Frank in New Jersey with Brad Marchand thought and what you were talking about earlier there. Chris, go ahead, Frank.
On the Marchand issue, whether or not he's actually hurt or if he's getting a timeout from Sweeney and Cassidy, given the fact that, you know, the league looked at this at every angle they could, and if there was something there, he would have gotten a suspension. And given the fact that they're still in the hunt for a division, do you think that they would keep him out of the lineup and only have 11 forwards for that game? And why open the whole can of worms with the you know, when he's not playing and he's not hurt.
Yeah, the first thing I'd say on what happened with Duclair is I understand what everyone's saying. Yeah, if the league look, that's a situation where Marchand has plausible deniability there. Like, the league can't just suspend people willy-nilly, even though I know
David
sometimes
Backish?
It feels that way. I'll be honest with you, I thought based on the way that was, like, I know people brought up, I think it was was it Hornquist who hit McAvoy?
Yeah.
And they were comparing those two hits. To me, there's no comparison there. Like, McAvoy's facing forward, still has the puck, and gets hit. The hit that Backett said, I didn't have a problem with it. I think he would have been fine as long as he didn't hit the guy up high. Unfortunately, he hit him up high. They're trying to get that out of the game. He got whacked. Like, too bad. I mean, that's what happens. I know traditionally in hockey it says finish your check, but the puck was gone. He hit the guy up high. They're concerned about concussions. They want to take that hit out of the game, whether they should or not. You know, that's what it is. I mean, I thought you could make a case if you're the NHL for that one. On the Martian one, I think it's a little bit of a tougher case to make, but whether it's they pulled him out of the game, the injury is legitimate. Do we all sort of agree that if the injury is legitimate, which I know you feel like it's not, that the injury happened on that play?
Definitely. That's what Cassidy said. Cassidy said, yeah, it was that same play. That, you know, Duclair went down and now Marchand's hurt too. I mean,
so
it's
either
not...
way, it's bad.
Yeah,
but if he was really injured too, they could have also made an emergency call up from Providence and had the kid fly to Chicago. Like, there's I think there's more to this, and the since a caller brought this up, the more that I think it actually might have been an internal team suspension is what they want to nip in the bud is what happened at the end of last year when you got that couple of game suspension for the spear on Jake Johnson going into the playoffs.
Yeah.
If it was more than that, he wouldn't have played in that series. Granted, they ended up losing it, but still, like, I feel like I wouldn't blame them, the Bruins brass, for, you know, saying, like, you're sitting on this one because we got to stop this before, you know, you can't be playing over the line at this time of year when we need you the most.
Well, if they're doing that, so if I buy into your conspiracy theory...
This is all speculation, of course.
No, I know, but if I buy into your conspiracy theory, then we can't do the he did nothing wrong, was just getting out of the way, because if they're trying to send him a message and basically saying, don't do this stuff, then they're admitting that he did something.
I think the retribution angle is more believable than that.
Yeah.
I think they were worried maybe someone from Chicago, a team with nothing
that
to play for, an angry sort of whatever, they'd go out there and target him, and maybe that was why.
That's what I initially thought, but I do like that caller that had that little conspiracy theory that, no, maybe, you know, Neely and Sweeney said, we got to sit you down and have a talk. You're not going to play on this one. Plus, we're going to protect you as well from retribution from the Blackhawks. Long commercial-free segment here. It is a re-entry Monday. We've talked a whole lot of stuff here. Bruins, Celtics, and Patriots. We even have a baseball call hanging for you there, Gasper. Allen in Florida.
Is it Belichick with an opinion on the Red Sox and how they're going to swing four outfielders into three spots?
Jimmy's whole thing that Bill Belichick is not doing anything with the Patriots offseason. He's just hanging with Linda, the lovely Linda, down at JetBlue Park, enjoying
La Russa and Eckersley.
The Red Sox.
Good to know he's an Eck guy, so he must hate David Price.
All right, so all your calls on all this stuff we touched on here, Felger and Maz, re-entry Monday. It's Gasper Murray in for the guys today. Christian Arkin, going to get you caught up in the Hub headlines, and then write to your calls right after this on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.